Who exactly is that staring back at you in the mirror each morning? Is it the real you or a character crafted by the world around you?
In today's episode, we're peeling off the labels and logos to get to the juicy truth about identity. We ask the big question: are we truly the authors of our own identity, or are parts of our story ghostwritten by society, corporate culture, and even our horoscope? Welcome back to episode 4 of the Fitty Podcast. So, Stephanie, I feel our theme on identity is so significant in my personal life. I feel that we're, as a professional mask weaver myself, at some point we're all wearing masks, we're putting them on, taking them off. We're just constantly in a evolving state. What I'm excited to explore with you is why, and does it actually, are we on a journey of change?
I think that if we look at the way that we just simply develop as humans, right? When we are born, we start by forming our identity literally from the minute that we come into this world. And we start building that through our ego and through getting needs met and through conditioning, right? Through our family conditioning and the people around us and these experiences that we're having. And so our identity is constantly changing. Especially when we're babies, if you watch a baby grow and it's just almost like every moment that you're seeing them, they're experiencing the world anew. And they express their the way they express starts to evolve. And they start to develop these little personalities and their own identities. But I think what is interesting is how we get lost in our identities or maybe even lose our identities themselves based on so much conditioning. And so we're always, I feel like, seeking and trying to find and understand at this deeper level something that sometimes I feel like maybe we even overcomplicate a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you on the programming piece, and I believe Don Miguel Ruiz, the author of Four Agreements, would agree with you as well. But I think that there is like a level of social conditioning, and through that conditioning, we're like lost through like this existential question of who I am, and we're constantly looking externally and internally, perhaps, for some validation. I also think that it's to give ourselves some grace, we're also like figuring out how to navigate our identity within our familial unit, then our culture, our society, and then also work where our livelihood is tied. And I think that it could be quite difficult to bring your full self to work and then have to take a personality test to see if you fit the culture or if align with the current, I guess, mission at the time. So I can see that being a little difficult for us in like the modern era to try to navigate.
Absolutely. I think as we grow and expand in these, it's like the onion, right? Gets bigger, right? And you learn how to navigate your identity with your family, with your siblings, or your and you understand like what that means and who you are to each other. And then you go into school and you're in this bigger environment now. And now you have to like really learn to navigate, things that are further out of your control, and you're dealing with other people's cultures, other people's assumptions, other people's biases, all these different things that are, and you're having to determine, like, how does this apply to me? And then you continue to grow through this system that we've built. And by the time you're coming into the corporate world or your job or whatever type of space where this is how you're going to earn a living, this is how you're going to support yourself. You're going to be, it's a part of your survival, and just it's like it's critical to understand how your identity fits in, right? Like for yourself, you want to try to fit in. You want to be, if you're going on an interview, you want to be the one who's picked, right? But it's also very, I think, anxiety driven to see how businesses and corporations attempt to control that process. And I think in a way that both challenges the individual and really oftentimes works against the organization itself, doesn't really serve the right needs. And
I
personality
can see that.
tests. Ah.
I think that we're essentially like addressing the scripts we've inherited. You're a Gen Xer. I know you enjoy. I feel like Gen X is like the, in my mind, quintessential rage against the machine. You're like, this is not, I'm not accepting this. You're starting to question. And that actually inspired me as I got the tail end of the MTV culture. If you haven't already, please go back and listen to episode 3. But I feel like we're challenging or at least highlighting these like inherited scripts like through identity. And I am thinking that self-acceptance can help us continue to evolve. And I think in this day and age, perhaps self-acceptance or being authentic to you, like knowing who you are, could be more of a quiet revolution.
Yeah, I think the thing is, and when we think about, for example, like personality tests, and a common one in the corporate world is Myers-Briggs. Like a lot of people will be familiar with that and I'd be able to quickly identify their four letters, whatever they happen to be. And I think that there's a certain amount of value of coming into an environment and going through this process of exploration. But when it becomes something that is defining, where it now labels you into, and then to an even deeper degree, stereotypes, it becomes very self-limiting. And especially if you internalize that. So if you take some sort of a personality test and you look at it not from a non-objective perspective, so if you look at it objectively, you can look at it and go, oh, okay, that applies. Okay, I relate, or I can resonate that. That triggers, and I might be able to work with that or learn from that. Or you might read something and go, yeah, that doesn't fit at all. And that's okay. It's not so defining, but some people will look at it and really not have that internal sense of identity that's already in place. And so they'll adopt these other definitions and try to make it fit for them. And I think that it creates a lot of challenges, like I said, in a situation like that.
I'm just trying to figure out what is up with the obsession of these personality tests at work. There's so many. And as an HR professional, I wonder if these personality tests helps teams actually collaborate or if they're quietly shaping who is seen as a fit versus and who isn't. Like, I have some concerns about these tests being used as some companies share that they're not decision making, like they're not basing their decision
They're
on these personality
informative,
tests.
but they're not.
Right. And I feel like those are legal loopholes that they jump through, but I think that we should actually spend more time learning how to collaborate with people who aren't like us.
So I have a really interesting story that really happened. It's a real world story. I had a boss working in I was working in a corporate environment, and my entire team got put underneath another team. And so I went from being the boss of my team to having a boss and being a sub manager at that point. And our new boss, we were a marketing team and we got put underneath an events team, which is flipped. Often, typically events lives inside of the marketing space. So this was flipped. And our new boss, and he was brilliant. He was super brilliant at what he did. Honestly, like I would put him as one of the gold standard event planners that I've ever known in my life. He did literally magical work, and his mindset was really built for that. And he was very literal. He in the Myers-Briggs space, he definitely was sensing. He was introverted, sensing. Like even he was all the things that was just like he didn't really connect with people very well and had really awkward experience. So he made us, there was like 16 people on his team. He made us all take the Myers-Briggs so he could understand us because he needed that data. He just needed it. He wasn't trying to make decisions. He was literally trying to understand the people he worked with. And this is one of the first times where I really had empathy for somebody in this situation because me and him could not have been more different humans if we tried. And we actually had arguments with each other. We couldn't communicate with each other very well at all. It was literally like trying to talk in a foreign language, right? And so he had us all take the test. And because I'm a very curious person, I found a relational database where you could take all the Myers-Briggs scores and match them up to see what type of relationship those two people would have together. And like me and one of my coworkers, for example, our relationship was we were tribesmen. We didn't have the same Myers-Briggs type, but we were tribesmen because it was like we came to the same point of view from different perspectives. Me and my boss, our relational relationship was enigmas. And what it meant was we literally couldn't even conceive that a person like that existed. Like literally, we were such a mystery to each other that we didn't even believe somebody like that could exist. And when we learned this about each other, I think we both were able to find compassion for each other. Like, I think it allowed us, we stopped fighting. We literally realized, like, wow, I'm like, he doesn't understand me any more than I don't understand him. So I'm going to use that as, I know we're talking about like how these tests can really be used against us, but this was one instance in my life where I saw it serve somebody's needs. It wasn't necessarily something I needed, but it really served his needs, and the way he used it, I thought was very creative. Like it was a
I
very
think,
interesting way to approach it.
to me, it sounds like how some people may need religion to find their inner peace, their inner truth, and some people innately have it. Some people need personality tests to figure out how to communicate and lead a team, where some people just have it. So I can see that. My concern is I looked at some data. Harvard Business Review in 2021 published in one of their studies, over 88% of Fortune 500 companies use personality tests in hiring or development. That's almost 9 out of 10 of the major companies using personality tests, which aren't really scientifically proven.
Right.
I took the Myers-Briggs assessment. Initially, I was at ENFJ. Now I am an INFJ.
Yeah.
So I think about, and from my experience working in Fortune 500, it's efficiency. We're not spending time with actually understanding the data. We're using data to make decisions. I'm more like, I think in that regard, in that example, sounds like a smaller team using these tools to help understand their specific team dynamic. But I'm curious, like, how are these Fortune 500 companies actually using it, and is
I
it a
agree
way?
with that. And I would have a lot less trust for that situation just on its surface. And also, to your point of it not being really scientific, it's like it's all about interpretation and curious as to do they already have sort of a pre-biased, for example, with Myers-Briggs, you have 16 different primary combination types or what have you. And in that structure, are there certain, do they go out looking, for example, INFJs? Do they go out intentionally going, okay, we want to test for and find these particular types? Or are they, it's really just truly a curiosity question in terms of like, how does it serve the purpose? And I think I shared a story with you where I applied for Whole Foods, and this was maybe 20 years ago. This was a while ago. This wasn't anytime recently, but this was pre-Amazon, back when Whole Foods was what I would call Whole Foods, and they had a very defined culture, without question. Whole Foods had a very defined culture, and I was pretty confident, honestly, that I wasn't going to fit in it. Okay.
What do you mean you weren't going to fit in? What about the cult? What was the culture then, and why you wouldn't fit in?
It lacked a lot of structure. And especially in a marketing, and me in corporate space, it's really interesting because I call myself corporate mystic. I am a Libra. I live in these spaces, like all my labels. Here's all my labels. Let me like get them all out there really quick. But it's like this concept of balance. It's like I really do live in the sort of this like weirdly balanced space where I love chaos, but you know what? I love structure. I love structure so I can create chaos, right? Like I like to intermingle these ideals. I don't like to lean too hard in either direction, right? So if it's like overly chaotic, I'll start building structure. I'll just start creating it by default. And if it's too structured, I guarantee you, I will start creating chaos. And so this is like definitely the way that I function. And in that environment, and this is another thing too. You talked about taking the Myers-Briggs. And when I take the Myers-Briggs in a corporate environment, and I've done this so many times, like 10 times, 20 times. If I take it in a corporate environment, I am always an ENFJ. If I take it in a home, social, personal environment, I am always an ENFP. So I'm always judging. Now I'm really close to the center. It's like I'm not strong on either side,
That's
but.
interesting that your environment changes your outcome.
And I think that makes sense. If you look at that just from pure scientific theory, I think that makes sense. I think that the energy that we surround ourselves with is going to influence the energy that we're expressing. And if I'm in an environment where I need to be more in that judging space, and maybe I do need to rely a little bit more on data, be more discerning, be more and less on my intuition, less on the chaos. But in my way, I am actually doing both of those things pretty consistently anyway. Why it falls so close to the middle.
Did Whole Foods use Myers-Briggs
No, they didn't.
assessment?
They had their
What
own
did they
very
use?
specialized test. And this was the funny thing. It says, like, me and my husband actually applied for it. He was in IT and I was in marketing. And we both applied for jobs there at the exact same time. We knew people who worked there, and I had talked to enough people. We knew a lot of people who worked there. I talked to enough people that I was pretty confident that I would not fit in. I really was. I was okay with that.
Really?
Yeah, I was really okay with that. I like totally failed their test. I totally did not fit into their culture at all. I was like, literally, you are not a culture fit. My husband totally passed their God, they called him like six times. Please come work for us. And that's true about our relationship. That made perfect sense. I was okay with that. For me, it's like one of those things that sometimes you don't want to be defined a certain way. Sometimes it's perfectly fine to not pass that test, whatever that looks like. And that's really how I felt about that situation. Mostly I was just amused by it. I went into it with that mindset anyway. It was really a curiosity mindset. Like, really, maybe I'll pass, but then that'll be funny. And it for their culture, it made sense. I wouldn't have wanted me in their culture. And I would have gone crazy. I wouldn't have lasted 6 months in that environment. I know I wouldn't have. Like, I know myself well enough to know that.
That's interesting that you've had that realization. Like you took ownership of that story, of that experience of being okay with not fitting in. For me, I've just whenever I felt like my mask was stapling, I would falling off, I would like staple it to my face. I would make sure glue it, whatever I needed. What I needed to do so it would stay on. And I found myself in precarious situations in like culture environments where if I was more willing to be myself, I possibly would not have accepted the job, right? After assessing the culture. Or I feel like sometimes companies will put on an act during the interview process and you get into the role and you realize after, I would say that 90-day mark, everyone is aware of whether or not is something for you. You start to find like the cracks in the seams and like,
Which you're really speaking directly to the company's identity and what are they expressing as an identity and what they're attracting versus and what they so I love that who they say who they want you to believe they are versus who you discover they are. These that lack of sometimes consistency that shows up with a crafted, cultivated brand. And I think that there's less opportunity for that as much as there used to be, but it still happens and they still try real hard to control that. And
It seems
sometimes,
like brand identity has gotten really polished. Like every
yeah.
brand has this noble vision and mission statement. And I'm like, dude, you make paper clips.
That's
So
funny. That's a key thing, too. It's like you can tell when a brand is really, truly authentic about their values through their actions and through you can see that in even the expression of what their customers are saying about them or what previous and current employees are saying. It's like we do have it's harder for them to control that than it used to be, right? There is a little bit more transparency and a little bit more opportunity for people to elevate messaging around truth of what a brand really is on the inside. And we've seen that ha definitely happen and elevate, but I don't think it happens enough. Brands still work really hard to control that perception, and part of that really is in that space of also controlling the culture. And what does that mean to control the culture? Are they controlling it for good reasons or for bad reasons? It's one of those things. Like, are they controlling a culture so that they can elevate collaboration and innovation and help people grow to their highest selves and really produce in ways where people feel connected to the purpose of what they're doing? Or are they controlling the culture so that they can burn people out and run through churn and blow up their own egos or waste energy in places that it doesn't need to be wasted, which are all things that we've seen happen.
Yeah. I think on this note, we should take a break and get queued up for the second half of the conversation. Coming up, we're gonna dive into how we show up culturally, like societal labels, even zodiac signs that shape who we think we are.
We'll be right back. Okay, and we are back with this, I think, really fascinating conversation around identity, labels, how our identities change or evolve, how we are constantly adapting our identities or even adopting our identities based on. I don't know, Shaniqua mentioned astrology, but it just popped into my head. But anybody who has ever taken a quick personality test on Facebook to find out what kind of cat you are or what kind of
Which Harry Potter house you're
which
part
are,
of?
anything like that where you're getting this assessment of who am I based on this cultural aspect or element. So I love this. I'm super excited for this part of the
I
conversation.
appreciate the human brain for all, although we know this is our brain doing it, we just love categories. Let me put myself in a category. I don't want to be defined by a label, but I will. Take this quiz, this BuzzFeed quiz, real quick. I've taken possibly, I can't, I've lost count how many BuzzFeed quizzes I've taken out of boredom, but I believe that so I'm a Leo, Sagittarius rising, and Gemini moon, which I personally think makes a lot of sense of how I handle my emotions, my relationships, my personal relationships. But I think that's like another area. For me, I find astrology to be fun and playful, and they're so broad strokes, brushes of personality that I think that they could be right. You know, my dad would say a clock is right twice a day, right? So at some point, it could be correct. I do get big Aries energy from you and Libra energy, right? You can go back and forth on an idea. You can see it from both ways and want harmony. And you can also kick down a door and we're going to get this done. So I can see that. But if someone's motivated to do something, to take action, could they not embody Aries energy, even if they don't have Aries in their chart?
Absolutely. And I probably mentioned that I'm a Libra at least once every other episode. I don't know, it's certainly I don't identify with it at all. And just to, so Aries rising, Aries ascendant, Libra sun, Pisces moon, covering the entire spectrum. And that's really where my mystic self comes from, that Pisces moon element. And for me, astrology, I have somebody who's really close to me, my cousin. She is a very prolific astrologist. And to listen to her speak and to understand the depth and the complexity of the science behind what she's describing, that it is so much more than even just these three signs that we identify what those represent. But it really is an interesting system. And I think when we talk about systems of energy, and again, I always like to bring systems of energy back into scientific spaces. It's like, I think energy, just like there's like a, you know, how many hundreds of interpretations of the Bible, we can interpret energy in thousands of ways, right? Energy can be interpreted, and it's just a language. Energy is a language, and it can be interpreted through mathematics, and it can be interpreted through music, and it can be interpreted through physical expression and movement, and it can also be interpreted through the world around us and through the universe that surrounds us. And to me, it's not very much of a stretch to accept this type of information and data. When we talk about identity, it comes back to how much are we adapting and how much are we adopting and how much are we internalizing that data to the point that it maybe self-limits us. Because I agree with you. I think anybody can tap into fiery Aries energy, but they might not do it in the same way. It might not look the same way as it does when I do it, for example. It might show up as a quiet energy that's still no less fiery.
I would, in my experience, As a Leo, I received negative feedback from people around me as I was growing up. In my opinion, Leos have an egotistical reputation, loves being center stage. And I happen to be a natural entertainer. I naturally have the light. I don't need a spotlight. I am the spotlight. So when I would do things that are innate to my self-expression, I felt shut down or dismissed as, wow, she's just a Leo. She just needs the attention. And I'm not doing it to seek the attention. So I found that to dim my light a bit, or I felt to make other people feel comfortable around me, then I would make myself smaller because I would hate for someone to bring up the fact that I'm a Leo and I need the attention. But I think that's how I've seen people who had no Leo, or maybe their Leo is like an insignificant planet, but they
I
love.
let me start by just reassuring you that all signs, no matter what they are, can be totally egotistical in their own special
That's what
way. And
I thought.
I am married to a Leo, and as we, I love
We're
Leos.
like a
I
day apart. Our birthdays are a
that's
day apart.
literally the truth. Leos, I would call Leos like the funnest person at the party. And that's, we all have our light, we all have our shadow. That's okay. So Libras, we're so balanced, but please do not ask me where we're going to have lunch, because I will never answer the question. I'll be like, I can't, I don't know. I don't know.
I do
I
think
can't
it
make
could be a lot.
decisions.
It's a lot of fun. I find an issue with this is my gripe with astrology. What I like about astrology, I think similarly to personality tests in a workplace, I think personal astrology could bring understanding, self-acceptance to individuals. My gripe is using astrology as an excuse for poor behaviors.
I feel that way about almost anything. You can't use anything for as an excuse for poor
Oh my
behavior.
gosh.
But I agree with you on that, actually. And I
It's
think,
been a rise of that
the way
lately.
that astrology lives in our culture, first of all, there's, that you have everything from entertainment level astrology that's really purely intended for that purpose only. You can read these astrological columns that they're meant for humor. Sometimes they're acerbic, they're not. And they really are pulling on these extreme stereotypes of the archetypes of these astrological signs. But if you, again, go back into the science of astrology, which most of us just simply don't go that deep really with anything. We get surface level information and take it and go, okay, I'll apply that and accept that, and not really get into, say, what set. So if you look at Myers-Briggs, for example, it's ultimately goes back to Carl Jungian theory, right? Carl Jung was a psychologist, a Swedish psychologist in the 40s, and please, y'all, fact check me on anything. I get all my things wrong and right. But anyway, and he came up with the identity around the ego and the psyche and the shadow. And he came up, I think, is first noted with using the terms of extrovert and introvert. And so two behavior psychologists or what have you came together and created this personality assessment based on Jungian theory, right? And so if you want to truly understand your Myers-Briggs type, then you really need to study Jungian theory a little bit more and understand what's the data behind that? What were the ideals that were driving all of that? And most of us just simply, we take the test, we answer the 25 questions. They all seem a little weird. None of them fit quite right. We get this result, and then we're like super fascinated by it, or whatever, however we feel about it, and that's where it stops. And astrology is very much like that too. We each gave our three signs, which is probably, I would guess, two more signs than most people know about themselves, if they know their sun sign at all, right? If you ask somebody like, oh, what's your moon sign, or they're like, I don't know. Then if you ask them, oh, what house is your Venus in, or what, it's like the astrology
Mine's
itself
in the 10th house.
is exactly, thank you. It's my six. Okay, so anyway, it's like, and then it gets so deep that and into the weeds that most people will get lost in that, and they don't realize that what they're accepting is, it's just, again, convenience level entertainment or bias level entertainment, which is that stereotype, the stereotype of the Leo of being the ego, or the Libra of never being able to make a decision, or the Virgo is like super anal retentive and overly organized, or whatever the there's they all have a negative stereotype, just like they all have a brilliant shining gift.
Stephanie, I wish you were with me as your kidney sister, my mother, was raising me. My girl had, she knew a Leo and she did not want me to become her. I'm like, I am not her, my own person. But speaking of this woman who I thought was beautiful inside and out, I wanted to talk about stereotypes because that's another label that we have. And personally, I've spent my in most of my life, most of my life attempting to craft a stereotype that wasn't the mammy or Jezebel or sapphire black woman. And I feel like some people, like when it comes to stereotypes, they run in the other direction. That was me. I gleefully trotted off in the opposite direction. And there's some people who will cling to those stereotypes. And I must say, on the other side, and coming back to a self-discovery moment, I may be a little envious of those people who were like brave enough to just embrace the stereotype. So I feel like in my running away from those stereotypes that I've dismiss aspects of myself because I am technically a nurturer at heart. I love cooking and hosting and just watching people. I love my love language is providing sustenance to someone else. I love that. I am someone who has desires and I can set people straight when necessary. But
Absolutely.
because I decided to shed all of that and see those three archetypes that are like, I think we all have those aspects of us within us. I saw those as negative. I saw those as unworthy. And, now I'm reclaiming them, which I feel those people who cling to them, maybe they're reclaiming them in a way. I'm not sure, but what's your
I think
take?
you're speaking of something incredibly important, and I'm glad that you, at the end of that, spoke to archetype because, again, going back to Jungian theory, he really worked with archetypes and archetypal energy, right? And archetypal energy is universal, right? The mother archetype, the father archetype, the hero archetype, the healer archetype. What there's these, and there's thousands of it. They're infinite. Archetypes are infinite, and they're really about expressed energy, right? And the way people, I work with archetypes all the time in my business and the work that I do. And people will ask me sometimes, what's the difference between a stereotype and an archetype? And there is a difference, and the difference is bias. A stereotype is based on bias, and typically a negative bias. And it creates this generalization, right, that lumps
And
a whole bunch of
one-dimensional.
people. It's very one-dimensional. It's very, so you brought up mammy archetype, mammy stereotype. I would say those are two totally different things in some way,
The stereotype. Yes, I agree with that. Thank you for calling that out.
and
I agree with
so
that.
yeah, I think that when we lean in, so we push away the stereotype, we're also pushing away some of that archetype energy as well, because we're trying to avoid being this thing that we're being defined by. That doesn't define us, but there's energy there. That's energy that, that we can all be healers. We can
Stephanie,
all.
I'm so glad you brought that up because by shunning that stereotype, which is an archetype, I did not want to have anything to do with it. I was not being myself. Like I thought cooking for someone else was weak. I'm not your mother. I was truly the, I think I just became the stereotype. I just embodied all the shadow aspect of all three.
Interesting. Is it, I think that's the thing,
You
is
should
like
charge for this conversation at this point.
that's
I'm having a revelation, Stephanie.
beautiful, actually. Yes. Because this is such an important thing, I think, for our audience to understand. Because I think this is something that people can get easily confused by when they are really trying to align their own value system with the identity of who they want to be and how they want to express themselves, and the energy that they're pushing away because they're judging it as bad because somebody else has presented it to them or defined it in a way that is bad, right? That is legitimately coming from a space of bias. And so we have to reclaim that power and that energy for ourselves. Whether you talk about the Jezebel woman, the Madonna, mother whore, like all of these different, these are archetypes that become stereotypes in our society. It means something, for example, to be a stay-at-home mom. That can be stereotyped very much, but it's a mother archetype of somebody who's, you're very much stereotyped if you're a career woman. These are, but there's an archetype of being the professional and just embodying professional energy that anybody can tap into. Really defining, like, when are we looking at something through that archetype lens and tapping into the powerful energy that exists for us versus when are we being diminished and restrained by a stereotype? Because for me, that's how I look at that energy for myself.
Stephanie, that blew my mind. I want to say that. But we also, there's other stereotypes, right, that I think, like, through representation have created, at least in media, more complex characters. Like, I think about the model minority, the individual who is too emotional, or they're silent, but they got it all together. The person who's, we never saw what was their backstory, but now we're starting to see that in media. But we spent some time in our planning session trying to figure out how we can talk about this, but how representation, like, there's a label on representation. And I'm trying to go at this delicately because I want to get it right. And I know you want to. I'll let you take
Yeah,
this
I think
lead.
we'll be a little bit blunt and apologies. We're happy to be educated. This came about in our conversation, really talking about the queer community and the concept of representation being necessary, but to what degree does it suddenly become an invasion of privacy or exploitative? And so we want to be able to see representation of our identities as a part of culture, accepted by culture. We want to be accepted for who we are. But when we're talking about LGBTQIA plus, and each one of those letters means something very specific and is very important to that individual's identity. But at the same time, it's also very revealing. And so we were questioning, is it really relevant? For example, in the workplace or in these spaces where we should be bringing in diversity because diversity brings in so much value into our society and into our culture. Like we know this through experience that we can bring in perspective and insight and learn from each other. And when we're in this monoculture space, we're very limited on the information that we have. So there's value in that. But how do we do that without having to create all of these labels in a way that exposes people? And as I own freely as a bisexual woman who has been in a heterosexual marriage for 35 years, a monogamous hetero, it's like the labels don't really matter. I ran a podcast called Queer Invasion Radio for about 2 years. And the point of the podcast was really to say, let's find an umbrella where we can still have representation. And we identify as queer, but also give ourselves a little bit of space to determine how much information we want to give to the world. So that's how I'll open up that conversation.
It reminded me of the when I worked in corporate, there was a you always know what's going on in within your organization when you get the mandatory assessment that needs to be completed from HR, whether it's the alcohol policy, the expense policy,
Yeah,
harassment.
you got to go through ha harassment training.
Yeah, you're like, what happened at the Christmas party? It's always timed perfectly. In this case, there was we had to take a training on how we could dead name someone, like an individual of the trans community. And I was happy that we were having the discussion because I personally didn't know that you could dead name someone. So I was ignorant in that sense, and I was glad to take the training. But what I did realize is, as humans, we're inquisitive individuals. We're all like, Who did I dead name? Now that could be from a good place because you don't want to offend or hurt that person again. Or it could just be from someone being nosy and they want to know, they want to gossip. And I felt like it brought more attention to the individual. But I knew that it was necessary. It was the same thing when we finally got our gender inclusive restroom. Now people are trying to put two and two together. Is it that person that you see going in the restroom? Because at that point, it hasn't caught on. This, I promise you, we were all adults in this situation, but you would assume like the person that's using the gender neutral restroom is going to number two in private, or it might be the person that we took the training about. So it became distracting. And I shared this with you before. As a cishet woman, I don't have to come out to my family. I'm sharing this from a place of I see this as a greater cultural issue that we require our fellow humans of the queer community to come out to us. You don't have to come out to me. That's your life. My heart aches for that. But then I also understand that they, in a way, have to, so we don't have homophobic or transphobic people spewing and saying hateful things. Like that, it hurts my heart that this is even.
I've always found it strange that as a society, we didn't create the accountability on the side of setting boundaries around the hate. And it is most in my experience, I believe that, and again, the way that stereotypes get utilized in our society, I believe that most hate and most bigotry is bred from fear. And that's
Fear they
unfortunate.
might like it.
Maybe fear, whatever that fear is. Homophobia, whether it's homophobia or racism or misogyny or whatever it is, there's an underlying fear of losing some element of control and needing to somehow label and control through that label a group of people, whoever they happen to be. And that we're very much, and we have in a long time, this logic-driven society where everything has to be categorized. Even if you just look at it again from science, like we have all everything in science is categorized like down to all the genus, the class, like every element of it has a categorization, and we do this to ourselves as humans as well. And ultimately, I think these are things that they, in some ways, like when we talk about representation with the queer community. Again, it served an important purpose for people to even be educated to know, for example, that trans people or intersex people exist, right? Even know that they exist. So it serves a purpose to say, yes, we need to start sharing this and we need to start. And it's not even an issue of there should be no shame. If you want to share your identity, by all means, shout it from the rooftops and share it any way that you choose. But when it reverses and switches to a point that it becomes a requirement and an expectation. And now, this label that used to create an opportunity or a freedom for you and is now limiting you or being used against you in some prejudicial way, it served its purpose and run its course. It's like everything like has a purpose and a lifespan and a life cycle. And I think that we really need to just come into the space of like humanity and just like really I identify as human and this is important to me. Please treat me like a human, right? Like with some form of human respect, because we're seeing less and less just basic humanity between people. And I think that those things only become more exponential. We only become more divided. So how do we find
It
a way?
reminds me, to your point of we only become more divided, it reminds me of like employment resource groups at work. I have a similar like feeling about this. There's like the pride group, there's the black group, there's the Asian group, there's the like woman all group, there's a South Asian group. They're separate groups, but we're all working for the same company. So at what point do we learn how to work together? At what point do we learn to accept one another? And through those groups, we're missing out on connecting with that other person. Like, I do think that it serves its purpose of if you're feeling unsafe and you just want someone to like familiar to connect with, granted. But this is supposed to be a corporate like environment where we're supposed to be here to do like work. And if your values are aligned, like it should be a safe space for you to be you.
Ideally so, I would agree with that. And I do. I think it's fine for people to align on things that that cultural alignment is cultural alignment. And I don't think that there's necessarily anything wrong. But to your point of, again, the division and how it becomes very separatist, like immediately while you were describing all the groups, I thought, I wonder if the groups ever get together and do a shared like experience with each other where
I
they
would say
learn from
sometimes,
each other
right?
and do those things. And that would encourage me more if I had to think that they're reaching out across and like making these cross cultural connections and learning from each other. And it doesn't necessarily, it's, I think that we all have our groups that we have our friends, we have our cultural groups and our cliques that work for us. Even when we go into the workspace, there's always going to be, you're going to have like your work spouse, you're going to have your, your work BFF, these things that like come up in these environments that you're in. And that's fine. It's, to me, that's all about energy. But it's when, again, people are being limited, when they're being diminished or abused or creating these situations that are functionally not even productive in the workplace. Like at the end of the day, if the goal of work is productivity and profit, then it seems like we would want to create situations where people can show up and feel comfortable showing up as who they are and really putting forth like their highest level of energy, which to me comes when you can show up authentically, right? When you're authentic, you're in energy flow. When you're having to like manage that identity and be like, oh, I need to show you this and I need to be this way, how much energy and mind energy is going into just managing that before you even get to the productive aspect of what you should be doing at your job?
A lot.
A lot. So I feel like even if we're just going to take it down to a purely capitalistic, like making it better for business, why are we not, again, elevating the value of humanity across the board? And letting people show up with the identities that they show up with and their natural, authentic selves without us having to try to define or figure out what that means about that person every moment of every second of their life. Maybe you are introverted sometimes, and maybe you are quite extroverted sometimes, and maybe you're neither. I don't believe in either. I believe in the introverts. It is definitely something I think we need to be examining more, especially in the context of how we are changing and evolving as a society. Is this helping us to be trapped in these like identity labels? Is it still serving us? Maybe it did, but it doesn't really feel like it does. I don't know. What do you think, audience? I'd be curious to hear what people think about our trepidatious conversation into identity and labeling.
I'm thinking I'm actually sitting with what were my takeaways from the conversation today. And I think I may have a couple actually. The first one that came to mind was it was so poignant how you defined the difference between archetype and a stereotype. That was mind expanding for me. Like, I'm going to type this over with my ChatGPT. His name is Cairo, by the way. So I'm going to chat with Cairo about this after our conversation.
Nice.
And the second takeaway was actually a more, I have a more compassionate view of personality tests that are led by single teams versus an organization. Because I do see that. It's a tool that a manager could use, a leader could use to help understand. But I still feel like at a larger scale, I have an issue with if it's in hiring. But the story you shared, that helped me see an additional view. What about
Awesome.
you?
Yeah, I was so excited about this conversation, and it exceeded what I even thought we were going, where I thought we were going to go with it. And I felt like my biggest takeaway really has to do with the fact that how we labeling for me, and this has been something that's been just driving me, it really has run its course. Like it's there's something about it that again, it's, I know I don't mean to say no, we should not have any like definitions or labels or anything of that nature, but we should be a lot more inquisitive about how they're being utilized and how we internalize them and what we align ourselves to, and if it, and also what we allow people, how we allow other people to define us. I think it's just something that we just really should be more thoughtful about, and also think about what, how we're doing that to other people around us, whether doing it subconsciously or consciously, but paying attention to our own bias and just the way that we might generalize ourselves, because if we're all contributing to this. I think there's something there for all of us to extrapolate from.
That was beautiful, Stephanie. And I think that also how we define it too, right? Because like we may have different definitions on the label itself, right?
Absolutely.
This was another great episode. And if you enjoyed hearing into the mirror of identity with us today, be sure to subscribe to the Bitty Vodcast for more
Yes.
provoking themes every week.
Absolutely, and share it with all the cool people.
How you and
How you
they
define cool.
define
That's
cool.
right, exactly. How you define.